This is Dave Summers, and welcome to AMA's Edgewise, where you will hear fresh insights from recognized thought leaders across a wide range of subject matters. AMA's Edgewise is brought to you by the American Management Association. The AMA is a global leader in professional development and education, improving the immediate performance and long-term growth of individuals and organizations. Check us out on our website, www.amanet.org. When a company's sales and profits are up, people often conclude that it's doing everything right. And when performance falters, they conclude that the company is doing everything wrong. But in fact, little may have changed. Phil Rosenzweig calls this phenomenon the halo effect. And it's the title of his new book, in which he unmasks the delusions that are commonly found in the corporate world. Phil Rosenzweig is a professor at IMD, the International Institute for Management Development, in Lausanne, Switzerland, where he works with leading companies on questions of strategy and organization. Phil, thanks for joining us today. Let's start out by talking about your background and what got you to write The Halo Effect.
Okay, well, I'm a professor at IMD in Lausanne, Switzerland. We're a business school, and for years now I've been interested in research about company performance. And what I've seen over the years is a lot of research out there, including some of the biggest bestsellers of recent years that claim to offer the secrets and the keys to high performance, are really not very well done. There are problems of design and problems of data. So what I've tried to do in this book is expose some of the errors in judgment and bad thinking that pervades the business world.
And what is the halo effect?
The halo effect is a concept in the field of psychology. We've known about it since about 1920. It's the very general common human tendency to make specific judgments based on an overall impression. In business, it often works as follows. If a company is doing very well, revenues are up, profits are up, share price is up, many people naturally infer that the company must have a brilliant strategy, a visionary leader, and a wonderful corporate culture, and they're really good at listening to customers and really good at execution and so forth. And as soon as that same company suffers a downturn, we tend to make the opposite attributions. We say, well, you know, they became complacent, or they lost the plot, or they forgot how to execute, or they ignored their customers. Now, occasionally companies really do get worse, but most of the time they don't. Most of the time what happens is that company performance leads us to make these negative attributions. Now, we find this in the work that journalists do, in interviews with managers, and so forth. And by itself, it's not that serious. But when we gather data that are corrupted, contaminated by the halo effect, and then use those data to try to explain firm performance, it turns out that we have the causality exactly backwards. And many of the things that we commonly believe drive company performance are not drivers at all. They're actually reflections of company performance. And many of the best-known big bestsellers out there fall into exactly this mistake.
In your book, you discuss how Cisco Systems was caught up in the halo effect. Can you talk about what happened to Cisco?
Okay. Well, that's a good question. It's not Cisco that suffered from the halo effect. It's we, journalists, reporters, writers, we suffered from the halo effect as we were thinking about Cisco. When Cisco was going up during the late 90s, we said, gosh, you know, Chambers is a fantastic manager. They're really customer-focused. They're magnificent at managing acquisitions and so forth. As soon as the internet bubble burst, if you read Forbes, Fortune, Business Week, Wall Street Journal, on and on and on, people made the opposite attributions. If you look closely at Cisco, they really didn't change in terms of how well they executed or how much they listened to their customers. We made different attributions about them because when the company was going up, they had a favorable halo. When it was going down, we used very different terms. Now, again, I certainly don't blame Cisco, and I don't even blame the reporters that were writing the stories. But if you want to try to do a study of company performance, you cannot draw on those data that are contaminated by the halo effect and believe that you have valid objective data. And that's the problem that case writers and a lot of business researchers fall into.
So leadership and company cultures are two of the most frequently cited drivers of high performance in the kinds of books you refer to. And you feel that this is wrong. Why do you think that it's a mistake to cite these two factors?
Well, let's take company culture first. I don't think I ever say it's a mistake to believe that company culture can have some effect on company performance. What I'm saying is that if you want to measure the impact that culture has on company performance, you cannot measure culture by simply asking people, how strong is your company culture? If you ask a question like that, people's judgments are going to be shaped by company performance. So if you want to measure company culture in an accurate or valid or objective way, you must find ways to operationalize it and measure it in a way that is not affected by company performance. Otherwise, you're going to find there's a correlation, but whether culture drives performance or performance drives perceptions of culture is an open question. What I critique in my book are studies that say that a strong company culture drives high performance, but when you look at how they measured it, they did not measure it in a way that was independent of performance, and that's something you cannot do.
Do you have any suggestions on how people can measure performance without being caught up in the halo effect?
Sure, that's a really good question. Let's stick with company culture for a minute. If you define company culture as having strongly held shared values, what you cannot do is go to people in the organization and say, do you have a strong culture? Because that'll be shaped by the halo effect. What you can do, you could, for example, enumerate a number of values and ask people individually, to which of these do you subscribe? And then you can figure out how many of them are strongly held. That would be a valid measure. Or rather than even asking people, you can spend time in a company and observe how people behave. How are they in terms of informality versus formality, merit-based versus longevity, openness of communication, willingness to engage in conflict. I mean, there's all kinds of things you can do to measure a culture by observing it, and those would be ways that would not be shaped by attributions based on performance. Of course, all those ways take more time, and the problem here is that many people want to do research that is very quick. They send out a survey, they ask people to evaluate their company, but unfortunately, those evaluations will often be made with an understanding of what company performance has been, and therefore they will be shaped by the halo effect.
So if the halo effect can influence a company's performance, can it also affect how we evaluate an individual's performance or value?
Well, we clearly see it with regard to individuals. One of the places that you most see it is the job interview. If somebody walks in the door and you know they graduated with honors from an outstanding school, you're going to think about their answers and their appearance and their manner differently than if that exact same person walked through the door with a very modest record of performance from some not very well thought of local school. We know that first impression, that halo, based on cues like academic record, shape our performance. And we know because of that if you're going to do a good job in interviewing people, you've got to have some people who interview candidates without knowing where they came from. You have to have some reliance on standardized tests or other objective measures. So there's a lot of places where we know the halo effect is very strong, and we've found ways to minimize that bias. Unfortunately, when it comes to researching company performance, we haven't done as good a job of trying to de-bias the way we conduct the studies.
What are some of the companies today that you think are affected by halos?
Well, I think it's very hard to look at Google without seeing that it has an extraordinary halo over it. And again, it's a very high performer, but because of its high performance, we tend to think that it's, brilliantly managed. It's got this motto, do no evil. As long as the company's doing well, we think, gee, what a brilliant new age motto. As soon as the company starts doing less well, we're going to say, gosh, that was simplistic and naive, and so forth. I would say Google is one. I would say Starbucks is one. And last year, thanks to the rise in petroleum prices, ExxonMobil posted fantastic performance. And as a result, in the Fortune survey, we think that it is more innovative, it has better quality products and services, it's better managed. I don't think any of those things have really changed for ExxonMobil. What changed was the price of petroleum, which led to higher performance, which led to a halo that makes us think it's more innovative, better quality, better management.
You single out Jarena DeLuca, the CEO of the high-tech firm Logitech, as a clear-thinking leader who has managed to avoid falling prey to delusions. What can we learn from his example?
Well, my book criticizes quite a few things, so at the end of the book, I give a few examples of managers who I think have been clear thinkers, not following a formulaic approach, but thinking about business as fundamentally involving choices under uncertainty in a risky setting. I mention Mr. DeLuca from Logitech. I talk about Andy Grove at Intel. I talk about Robert Rubin when he was at Goldman Sachs. All three of them, to me, are able to try to go beyond the idea of business as something that is predictable and lends itself to formulas, and instead they understand the nature of uncertainty and the need to take specific choices under conditions of uncertainty.
All right, the book is The Halo Effect, and the author is Phil Rosenzweig. Thank you, Phil, for joining us today.
Okay, all the best.
It's time for You've Been Spotted, where we interview random people who are attending a workshop or seminar at one of our five executive conference centers. For more information on our executive conference centers and seminars, please visit our website, www.amanet.org. And now here's Kevin Lee.
One of the causes of the halo effect is when employees stop asking questions to get a full picture of their companies and their jobs. Today I visited AMA's seminar, Management Skills for New Managers, and I asked participants how they got the clarity they needed during times of confusion or miscommunication.
The situation I have in my mind is one of a communication, some confusion around a communication that had gone out. So I had called this person in, and we were speaking about the incident, and I could tell by her body language and her a kind of like a smirk that was on her face, a smile of sorts that was not because she was happy. And so, you know, I, you know, just kind of dug a little bit deeper and asked her, you know, it looks like you disagree with me. I'm not quite sure what, you know, can you tell me a little bit about how you feel? We were able to at least be honest. We didn't actually come to an agreement about what was, you know, the bottom line of the situation, but at least it was spoken and she, you know, was open about how she felt.
Is it pretty easy for you to dig deeper? Because I'm, you know, a lot of people are afraid to be confrontational or to kind of broach something when and they feel uncomfortable.
I just put myself, I guess, in the other person's shoes as well, and kind of think, you know, how do they want to be approached on this, and what needs to come out of it. You know, I needed to get to the bottom of it with her in this particular instance to make sure that our relationship going forward would be free of, you know, any confusion and tension.
Have you ever been in like a project where you felt like you weren't being given enough information to work with, from your boss or from someone else?
Yes, actually, most of the time that has been the case. So you have to kind of feel your way through during the execution phases, and you have to collect info that you needed.
I had an assignment once where I was given the big picture, but nobody actually gave me instructions on how to achieve my goal. So I had to think about where I needed to be first, and then step back and say, okay, what do I have the necessary skills? Can I do this? And yes, I can do this, but I just need more information. I would try to approach different people or different groups, try to get all the information that I would need to get my job accomplished. But on the way, explaining to them why I needed it, the time frames that I needed it in, which got them involved as well. And then I got them to contribute to my project. And at the end of it, I acknowledged their contributions. Those are the steps that I would look for my direct reports to take.
Just remember, we really need your feedback. So please drop us an email at podcast@amanet.org or call us at 800-697-3406. That number again is 800-697-3406. Thanks for taking us along. I'm Dave Summers, and you've been listening to AMA's Edgewise.